This is disc number 6.
Richard answered Nikki, "What I know is that somehow, in some way, someone has made all of you forget that Kaylin exists. I know that she's real, and I intend on finding her, even if you don't like it." Nikki, her blue eyes brimming with tears, turned her back on him and gazed up briefly at the statue towering over her. "Richard, I would eagerly grant you your dream were it within my power to make it real. You cannot imagine what I would give to have you have what you want, to make you happy." Richard watched the violet clouds at the horizon turning dark. It somehow seemed too peaceful to be real. Nikki stood with her arms folded, staring off in the opposite direction, staring into the gathering darkness. Kara stood nearby, keeping an eye on all the people roaming the former palace grounds. "Nikki," Richard finally said into the uncomfortable silence atop the vast marble circle, "do you have any explanations other than this being a dream? Is there anything within your knowledge that has any chance at all of being the cause of this? Is there anything at all, any kind of magic, that you can think of that would help solve this puzzle?" He watched her back, wondering if she would answer. A long shadow lay across the curved bronze dial plane encircling the proud figure, telling him what he knew, that the day was dying, that valuable time was slipping away. Finally, Nikki turned to him. The fire seemed to have gone out of her. "Richard, I'm sorry that I can't make it real for you." She brushed away a tear as it ran down her cheek. "I'm sorry to let you down." With a grim expression, Kara met Nikki's gaze. "I guess we have something in common." Richard gently touched his fingertips to the statue of Spirit. The uplifted face, its proud gaze set in white marble, lost its glow as the last rays of the setting sun sank behind the hills. "Neither one of you let me down," he said. "You both are telling me what you believe. But Kaylin is not a dream. She's as real as her spirit carved in this stone." Chapter 15. Richard turned to a distant commotion and spotted a group of people heading toward the monument. From atop the prominence, he could see yet more people strung out behind, perhaps drawn by the activity or perhaps by the purposeful look of the cluster of men as they made their way across the open expanse of ground. At the head of the small crowd was just the man Richard wanted to see. Still some distance off, the man waved an arm.
"Richard!"
Despite everything, Richard couldn't help but smile at the familiar stocky fellow wearing his customary, curious red hat with a narrow brim. When the man saw that Richard had seen him, he picked up his pace, trotting across the grass.
"Richard!" he called again. "You've come back, just as you promised."
As the group of people swarmed up the hill of steps, Richard started down to meet them. It was then that Richard also saw that Victor was making his way steadily through the gathering throng. At a wide marble landing, Ishak rushed up and seized Richard's hand, pumping it with great glee.
"Richard, I'm so happy to see you back in Alterang. You come to drive a wagon for my transport company, yes? I have orders stacked up. How do I get myself into these messes? I need you back. You can start tomorrow."
"Glad to see you too, Ishak."
Ishak was still pumping Richard's hand.
"Then you will come back? I will make you a full partner. We share everything equal, you and I."
"Ishak, with as much money as you owe me."
"Money?"
Ishak scoffed.
"What is this talk of money? I have so much work now and more all the time that there is no time to worry about money. Forget money. We can earn all the money you want. I need a man with a good head. I will make you a partner. If you want, you can make me your partner. We will get more work that way. Everyone asks after you. 'Where is Richard?' they all say. I tell you, Richard, if you..."
"Ishak, I can't. I'm trying to find Kaylin."
Ishak blinked.
"Kaylin? His wife.
a scowling Victor said as he stepped through the men behind Ishak. Ishak turned to gawk at Victor. He turned back to Richard.
Wife?
He swept his red hat off his head.
Wife? But this is wonderful!
He spread his arms.
Wonderful!
He threw his arms around Richard and hugged him as he laughed and danced back and forth on the balls of his feet.
You took a wife! This is wonderful news! We will have a banquet and...
She's missing, Richard said, easing Ishak back to arm's length. I'm looking for her. We don't know what happened.
Missing?
Ishak swiped back his dark hair and replaced his red hat.
I will help. I will go with you.
His dark eyes turned serious.
Tell me what I can do.
It was no empty offer Ishak made for the sake of courtesy. He was sincere. It was heartwarming to know that this man would drop everything to help. Richard didn't think, though, that this was the time or place to explain. It's not that simple.
Richard, Victor said as he leaned closer, we've got trouble.
Ishak frowned at Victor, gesturing irritably.
Richard's wife is missing. Why you bring him more worries on top of that?
It's all right, Ishak. Victor already knows about Kaelin.
Richard rested his left hand on the pommel of his sword.
What sort of trouble? He asked Victor.
Scouts have just returned to report Imperial Order troops coming this way.
Ishak swept his hat from his head again.
Troops?
Another supply convoy? Richard asked.
No,
Victor said with a firm shake of his head. These men are combat troops, and they're coming this way.
Ishak's eyes grew round.
Soldiers are coming? How soon?
Voices carried the worrisome news back through the growing crowd.
At the rate they're marching, they're still a few days out. We have some time to get our defenses organized, but not a lot of time.
Nikki stepped up close to Richard's side. With her back straight, her head held high, and her cutting gaze, she drew all eyes. Voices quieted as they watched her. Even people who didn't know who Nikki was tended to fall silent in her presence. Some because of her stunning looks, some because there was just something dangerous about her commanding presence, on top of her physical attraction, that made them tend to lose their nerve along with their voice.
And the scouts are sure they're headed this way? She asked. Couldn't they just be passing near on their way north?
They're not heading north.
Victor arched an eyebrow.
They're coming from the north.
Richard's fingers tightened around the hilt of his sword.
They're coming down from the north, are you sure?
Victor nodded.
They're seasoned combat troops. Worse still, they've picked up one of those priests somewhere along the way.
The gathered men gasped. Whispers of the news spread back through the crowd. Some of the men started asking questions, each trying to be heard over the others. Nikki lifted a hand, commanding silence. With no more effort than that, the darkening hillside of marble steps fell quiet. In the tense hush, she leaned toward the grim blacksmith. Nikki's brow drew down like a hawk that had just spotted dinner.
They have a wizard with them? She hissed.
Victor didn't back up, one of the few who didn't.
He's said to be a high priest of the Fellowship of Order. All the brothers in the Fellowship are wizards,
Ishak pointed out.
This is not good news, not good at all. Can't argue with that, Victor said. From the reports brought back by the men, there is no doubt that this one is a wizard.
Worried conversation again swept through the crowd. Some swore that such a development would make no difference, that they would fight any attempt by the Order to take back Alter Rang. Others weren't so sure as to what should be done. Nikki, staring off as she considered what she'd heard, finally returned her gaze to Victor. Do the scouts know his name or anything about him that might help identify him? Victor hooked his thumbs behind his belt as he gave her a single nod.
The high priest's name is Kronos.
Kronos, she murmured in thought.
The scouts who spotted the troops used their heads, Victor told her. They hadn't been seen, so they got out ahead of the soldiers and mingled into a town along the Legion's path and waited for them to arrive.
The soldiers camped just outside the town for a few nights to rest up and to resupply. Apparently, they stripped the town bare in the process. When they got drunk, they talked enough for my men to get the gist of what they're up to. And what they are up to is not just putting an end to the insurrection in Alterang. Their orders are to crush the revolt and not to be gentle about it. They said they were to make examples of the people there. They don't seem to think it will be a big task, and they're looking forward to the fun they'll be having after the victory. A pall of silence fell over the crowd.
What about the wizard? Ishak asked.
The men say that this fellow Kronos is a pious sort. He's average height with blue eyes. He didn't do any drinking with the soldiers. Instead, he lectured the townsfolk long and often on the need to follow the Creator's true ways by sacrificing what they had for the good of their fellow man, the Imperial Order, and their beloved Emperor. But as it turns out, when he's not lecturing, he's a lech, and apparently it doesn't matter much to him who the woman is or if she's at all willing. After one man angrily raised a ruckus about his daughter being taken right off the street by Kronos' orders, the good brother came out and with a flash of his power burned the hide right off the father. The pious wizard left the man screaming and twitching as a lesson, and he went back inside to finish his business with the daughter. The poor fellow was several hours dying. My men said that it was as horrifying as anything they'd ever seen. After that, no one else had much to say when any woman caught Kronos' eye. Murmuring broke out in the crowd. Many of the people were shocked and angered by the story. A number were frightened that this man was not only coming for them, but was under orders to make examples of them. Nikki didn't look at all surprised by the report of such brutality. After lengthy consideration, she finally shook her head. I don't know this brother of the order, but there are a number of them that I don't know. Ishak's dark eyes shifted between Richard and Nikki.
What are we going to do? Troops? And a wizard? This is not good. But you have ideas, yes?
Some in the crowd voiced their agreement with Ishak, wanting to know what Richard thought. He didn't really see what there was to discuss.
You've all fought for and won your freedom, Richard said. I would suggest that you don't give it up.
A number of men nodded. They knew all too well what it was like to live under the heel of the order. They had learned, too, what it meant to be free to live their own lives. Nonetheless, fear seemed to be stealing into the mood of the crowd.
But now you're here to lead us, Lord Rawl, one of the men said. You've faced worse than this, I'm sure. With your help, we can fight off these soldiers.
In the gathering gloom, Richard appraised the expectant faces watching him. I'm afraid that I can't stay. I have something of critical importance I must do. I will have to leave in the morning at first light. Shocked silence greeted him.
But the soldiers are only a few days away, one of the men finally said. Surely, Lord Rawl, you can wait that long.
If I could, I would stand here with you against these soldiers, just as I've stood with you before, but right now I can't afford to delay that long. I must carry the fight elsewhere. It's the same fight, so I will be with you in spirit.
The man looked stunned.
But it's just a few days.
Don't you see that it's much more than that? If I stay and we defeat these men who are coming to kill you, then eventually more will come. You have to be able to stand on your own. You can't depend on me to stay here indefinitely and help you uphold your freedom every time Jagang sends soldiers to take back Alterang. The world is full of places like Alterang, all facing the same ordeal. Sooner or later, you'll have to accept the responsibility of standing on your own. Now is as good a time as any.
So you're deserting us when we need you most?
A voice farther back called out. The crowd didn't speak up to agree with the sentiment, but it was clear that more than one person had the same thought. Kara inched forward. Before she could step in front of him, Richard surreptitiously lifted his hand, touching her leg in warning for her to stay where she was.
Now look here, Victor growled. Richard isn't deserting anything, and I'll hear none of that kind of talk.
Men backed away at the measured menace in his voice. Victor's glare alone was enough to turn men twice his size pale.
He has already done more for us than anyone ever before.
He showed us that we can each run our own lives for ourselves, and that's what changed everything. You've all lived here your whole life under the order. Richard showed us what we're really made of, showed us that we're proud men and we can handle ourselves with courage. We're the ones who took the responsibility for our own lives and gained our own freedom. He didn't come here and give us anything. We earned it.
Most of the men standing on the steps and spread out across the lawns fell silent. Some, feeling shamed, stole looks around at the others. A number of the men finally spoke up that they agreed with Victor. As the men fell to debating among themselves what it was they ought to do, Nikki seized Richard's arm from behind and drew him back to where she could speak in confidence.
Richard, this fight here is more important.
I can't stay.
Her blue eyes flashed with bottled fury.
This is where you should be leading these men. You're the Lord Rawl. They're counting on you.
I am not responsible for their lives. They already made their choice as to how they will live when they started the revolt. They did that on their own, and they won that battle. We all are fighting for what we believe in. We all are fighting for the same thing, the right to live the life we want for ourselves. I'm doing what I believe I must.
You're running away from the fight to chase phantoms.
The sting of her words hung in the air, unanswered. Richard instead stepped away from the sorceress and addressed the men.
The old world and the new world are at war.
The crowd slowly fell silent as people craned their necks in order to see Richard and hear his words.
The troops on their way here are battle-tested men from that war. As they've rampaged across the land, they've used their swords, axes, and flails against both the armed and the unarmed people to the north. The people of the new world, those troops are experienced at overrunning cities and slaughtering the inhabitants. When they get here, they will torture, rape, and murder the people of this city, just as they've done to the people in cities to the north, unless you stop them first. But even if you do stop them, that will not be the end of it. The Order will send more soldiers. If you defeat them, they will eventually send even more the next time.
Richard, what are you saying?
Ishak asked into the still evening air.
Are you saying that it is hopeless? That we should give up?
No!
I'm saying that you need to face the true dimension of what it means to fight the Imperial Order, the true nature of the task. If you wish to be free, then you need to do more than stand here in this place and defend your city.
No war was ever won defensively. If you are to be truly free, then you must fight to put a stop to those who seek to extinguish freedom. If you are to be truly free, then you must be part of the cause to rid the world of the Imperial Order. The Daharan Empire, the land I rule, is all that now stands against the Order.
Richard slowly shook his head.
But alone, they have no chance to win. Once the Daharan Empire falls, Emperor Jagang will be freed up from the effort of that war, and he will then bring his full force to bear on any pockets of resistance to the Order's beliefs. At the head of his list will be Alterang. This is his home city. He will not allow the black mark of freedom to stand against his devout beliefs. He will turn loose on you his most vicious fighters, the sons of the old world. You will be isolated and gutted by Jagang's army of your fellow countrymen. You will die to a man. Your male children will be murdered, and your wives and sisters and daughters will be used as rewards for the brutes who enforce the Order's authority.
The crowd stood in rapt silence. They were now in the grip of fear. This was not the brave and boastful talk they had expected to hear on the eve of battle. Victor cleared his throat.
Are you trying to tell us something, Richard?
Richard nodded as he gazed out over the mute throng watching him from below the landing where he stood.
Yes, I'm trying to tell you that you must do more than stand and defend yourselves when these men come. You can't win that kind of war. You must strike out at the Imperial Order and help bring them down.
Ishak lifted a hand.
Bring them down? In what way?
As you all well know, life under the Order offers nothing but decay and ruin.
There is little work, little food, little to look forward to, except the promise of glory and some afterworld life. But only in exchange for your selfless service in this one. The priests of the Fellowship of Order have nothing to offer you but misery. So they proclaim suffering of virtue and in exchange generously grant you extravagant eternal rewards in some other world. Rewards that cannot be examined beforehand. Rewards in a world that is unknowable. Except, they claim, to them. Not one of you would be gullible enough to trade a dog for such hollow promises. And yet legions have been swindled into eagerly offering up their own lives, the only life they will ever have, in the unfair exchange. Jigang invokes the cause of the Creator, the fight for mankind's future, and the elimination of those with the gift as the noble reasons for the old world to invade the new world. He tells his subjects that the people far away to the north are immoral heathens, and as a duty to the Creator, they must be struck down. In reality, Jigang is doing nothing more than producing a diversion to cover the widespread poverty and unemployment created by the Imperial Order's doctrines. A failed old world of crushing poverty and widespread death is thus blamed on traitors among the people, that would be you, and on their supposedly wicked brethren to the north. Jigang gives hopeless young men an object of hatred upon which to extract revenge for their misery. In so doing, out of the ranks of the young men of the old world, Jigang has created an army of zealots. You know yourselves the throngs of such young men who have departed from Alterang to join the noble cause. These men have little in life to look forward to, and have grasped eagerly at the Order's teachings. Jigang has given them someone to blame for all their woes, those who don't submit to the teachings of the Order. These men have been indoctrinated in a culture of death and turned loose on those who have liberty, prosperity, and the most hateful thing of all, happiness. Most are well beyond reason or redemption. Fighting far from home, Jigang allows these savages to pillage and loot their way across the land, hoping they will forget the miserable future awaiting them back home. In the name of the Creator and the Order, they slaughter all opposition and take vast territory as their own. With their great numbers, they vanquish all who go up against them. They terrorize everyone in their path. The panic of waiting for the murdering horde to arrive is too much for many. And in the hopes of being spared the worst of what Jigang's men would do, some places surrender and petition to join the cause of the Imperial Order.
"You are saying it is hopeless to fight them?"
someone asked into the tense evening silence.
"I am telling you the true nature of what we all face," Richard said. "But it does not have to be hopeless if you understand the essence of the fight. For one thing, the Imperial Order has not fully grasped the corrosive effect of distance from their homeland. No matter how much they loot, they still need vast quantities of every kind of supply, from flour to make bread to feathers to make arrows. They can't scavenge enough food to feed their numbers. They need craftsmen and workers to support their fighting men, and they need a steady stream of new soldiers to replace the vast numbers lost in the battles of the campaign. It is difficult to fight in a strange and distant land. Their losses from sickness alone have been staggering. Yet with reinforcements always arriving, they have been able to more than replace all they lose. Their army grows constantly, becoming more formidable with each passing day. But that means it also has more needs every day. Those convoys of supplies that are constantly streaming north are vital to the efforts of the Imperial Order in conquering the New World. The New World may seem a faraway problem to you, but it is your problem as much as those troops headed this way in a few days. Once those brutes up north are finished murdering my people, they will be coming back here to murder you. If the Order wins, all of us lose. It doesn't matter where we are. There will be no place to hide. If you want to live, not just tomorrow or the day after you defeat those troops headed this way, but to live next season, next year, and the year after. If you want to raise a family,
keep what you earn and better yourselves in the lives of your children, then you need to help to destroy the Order's ability to survive. Victor and his men have already been doing this, but they are only able to whisper when they need to howl in fury. They need far more people to join them in the effort. You need to help in a determined effort to hit the Order's supply convoys and destroy them. Kill their men going to fight. Cripple their ability to carry on. You need to deprive the Order of flour and feathers and reinforcements. Every man who dies of starvation in the trackless mountains to the north is a man the Order can't send back to the old world to shove his knife in your belly. In addition, there are other means to prevail. Richard gestured to Kara and Nikki. These two who now stand with me once stood against me. They were enemies of what I believe in, of what you have come to believe in. But when I helped them to understand that I fight for life, for the values of life, they came to realize the truth and became warriors in that same cause. Richard lifted a hand out at the crowd spread down the steps and across the lawns. Look at all of you. Not all that long ago you were the enemies of the New World. Many of you for much of your lives might have believed the lies of the Order. But when given a glimpse of the bright flame of what life can and should be, you had the presence of mind to choose life. I now stand with former enemies in the heart of enemy territory, among a people once my enemy. Yet now we are all believers in the same cause, that life is worth living for its own sake. Many of us have become fast friends. We are now all on the same side in the greatest struggle of our lives. It is possible to make some people who are working for the success of the Order see the wonder and beauty in this life. If you can do that, then you will have one less person who wants to kill you. It would be my choice to win them all over to the truth, and to have a world of people living in peace. But there are those who are lost to the truth. Lost to the reason. They hate that you embrace what is good in life. If you can't win these followers of the Order to our side, then you must kill them. For surely, given the chance, they will kill you and destroy everything you hold dear. You must spread the fight everywhere. Leave no place safe for those who preach death. Yes, you will need to kill the wild-eyed fanatics eagerly fighting in the cause of the Order. But far more important than that, you must strike at the root and kill those who preach the doctrines of the Imperial Order. They are the ones who corrupt and poison unthinking minds, and if not stopped, they will breed an endless supply of newly minted brutes to come after you and your families. Men with such hate in their hearts recognize no boundaries. They will never allow you to exist because your prosperity and happiness puts the lie to what they teach. If you wish to live free, then you must see to it that these disciples of hatred know that there is no safe place for them, that their ways will not be tolerated by civilized men, and that you will not rest until they are all hunted down and killed, because you understand they want nothing less than to end civilization. You must not let them have what they lust after. You've all bravely taken the first step and thrown off your shackles. None of you need prove yourselves to me. But this is not about a single battle won. This is about the future of how you will live your lives from now on, how your children and your grandchildren will live their lives. You fought bravely. Many have already lost their lives pursuing our common goal, and many more yet will. But victory over evil is possible, and within your power. You want to battle for something profound, your own lives to live as you see fit. But don't now fail to see that the war for that ideal is a long way from being finished. You have won your right to live free today. Now you must have the fire to fight to live free always. Freedom is never easy to keep and can easily be lost. All it takes is willful indifference. Richard lifted an arm back toward the statue standing proudly in the afterglow of sunset.
That will to hold life dear to be free is the spirit of this statue we all so admire.
But Lord Rawl, someone complained, that is too big a task for us. We are simple people, not warriors. Maybe if you were to lead us, it would be different.
Richard laid a hand on his chest. I was a simple woods guide when I realized that I had to rise to the challenges facing me. I, too, didn't want to face the seemingly invincible evil that loomed over me. But a wise woman, the woman that statue is modeled after, made me see that I had to do so. I'm no better than you, no stronger than you. I am simply a man who has come to understand the need to stand without compromise against tyranny. I have taken up that cause because I no longer wanted to live in fear, but to live my own life. Those people in the New World to the north are fighting and dying every day. They are simple people like you. None of them wishes to fight, but they must, or they will surely die. Their fate today is your fate tomorrow. They can't continue to stand alone and hope to win. When your time comes, neither will you. They need you to be a part of a free world, to attack those who bring the shadow of a dark age over all the world. A man near the front spoke up.
But aren't you saying the same thing as the order, that we must sacrifice for the greater good of mankind?
Richard smiled at the very idea. Those who wish to impose an idea of a greater good are simply haters of the good. It's enlightened self-interest that causes me to lift a sword against the imperial order. It's purely for your own self-interest and your self-interest in those you love that I think you should fight, in whatever way you think you can best help our common goal. I'm not forcing you to fight for the greater good of mankind, but trying to make you see that it's a fight for your own life. Don't ever make the mistake of thinking that such self-interest is wrong. Self-interest is survival. Self-interest is the substance of life. In your own reasoned self-interest, I suggest that you rise up and strike down the order. Only then can you truly have freedom. The eyes of the old world are upon you. The dark figures of all the people in fading light stretched back as far as Richard could see. He was relieved to see a lot of nodding heads. Victor's gaze swept over the men before he turned back to Richard.
I think we are of a mind, Lord Rawl. I will do what I can to see it through.
Richard clasped arms with Victor as the crowd broke into cheering. Finally, as men all across Liberty Square began talking among themselves as to how best to meet the challenge, Richard turned away and took Nikki aside. Kara followed close on his heels.
Richard, I know the value of what you have just done, but these people still need you to...
Nikki, he said, cutting her off. I have to leave in the morning. Kara is going with me. I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I think it would be a good idea if you were to choose to stay and help these people. They're facing a terrible enough challenge just with the soldiers, but they additionally must face a wizard. You know a lot better than I how to counter that kind of threat. You could be a tremendous help to these people. She looked for a long time into his eyes before she glanced to the crowd not far off behind him and down the steps.
I need to be with you,
she said in a measured tone, but it still sounded to him like a plea. Like I said, it's your life, and I'm not going to tell you what to do, just like I'd not like you trying to tell me what I must do.
You should stay and help, she said.
She broke eye contact and looked away.
But it's your life, and you must do what you think best. I guess, after all, you are the Seeker.
She again glanced at the men gathering around close to Victor, making plans.
These people may not right now voice objections to what you had to say, but they will be thinking about it. And they may very well decide later, after they face the soldiers, after a terrible and bloody fight, that they don't wish to do more.
I was kind of hoping that if you stayed and helped them defeat this wizard and the troops coming this way, that you could then add your weight to my words and help convince them of what they need to do. Many of them are well aware of how much you know about the nature of the order.
They will put stock in what you say to them, especially if you've just helped them save their city and keep their families safe. Richard waited until she looked up at him before he went on. After that, you could then come to join Kara and me. She appraised his eyes as she folded her arms across beneath her breasts. You are saying that if I help stop the Order's force coming to kill all these people, then you would allow me to join you? I'm just telling you what I think would be the most beneficial thing for you to do in our struggle to eliminate the Order. I'm not telling you what to do. She looked away again. But it would please you if I did as you suggest and stay to help these people? Richard shrugged. I admit to that. Nikki sighed irritably. Then I will stay, as you suggest, and help them defeat the threat looming a few days away. But if I do that, defeat the troops and eliminate the wizard, then you would allow me to join you? I said I would. She finally, reluctantly, nodded. I agree. Richard turned. Ishak? The man hurried close.
Yes?
I need 6 horses.
6?
You will be taking others with you? No, just Kara and me. We'll be needing fresh mounts along the way so we can rotate the horses we ride to keep them strong enough for the journey. We need fast horses, not the draft horses from your wagons. And tack, Richard added.
Fast horses?
Ishak lifted his hat and with the same hand scratched his scalp. He looked up.
When?
I need to leave as soon as it's light enough. Ishak eyed Richard suspiciously.
I suppose this is to be in partial payment for what I owe you?
I wanted to ease your conscience about when you could begin to repay me. Ishak succumbed to a brief laugh.
You will have what you need. I will see to it that you have supplies as well.
Richard laid a hand on Ishak's shoulder. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. I hope someday I can get back here and haul a load or two for you, just for old time's sake. That brightened Ishak's expression.
After we are all free for good?
Richard nodded. Free for good. He glanced at the stars beginning to dot the sky. Do you know a handy place where we can get some food and a place to sleep for the night? Ishak gestured off across the broad expanse of the old palace grounds to the hill where the work shacks used to be.
We have inns now since you were here last. People come to see Liberty Square, and so they need rooms. I have built a place up there where I rent rooms. They are among the finest available.
He lifted a finger.
I have a reputation to uphold of offering the best of everything, whether it be wagons to haul goods or rooms for weary travelers.
I have a feeling that what you owe me is going to be dwindling rapidly. Ishak smiled as he shrugged.
Many people come to see this remarkable statue. Rooms are hard to come by, so they are not cheap.
I wouldn't have expected them to be.
But they are reasonable, Ishak insisted. A good value for the price. And I have a stable right next door, so I can bring your horses once I collect them. I will do it now.
All right. Richard lifted his pack and swung it onto a shoulder. At least it's not far, even if it is expensive. Ishak spread his hands expansively.
And the view at sunrise is worth the price, he grinned. But for you, Richard, Mistress Kara, and Mistress Nikki, no charge.
No, no. Lifting a hand, Richard forestalled any argument. It's only fair that you should be able to earn a return on your investment. Deduct it from what you owe me. What with the interest, I'm sure the amount has grown handsomely.
Interest? Of course. Richard said as he started toward the distant buildings.
You have had the use of my money. It's only fair that I be compensated for that use.
The interest is not cheap, but it's fair and a good value.
Chapter 16. As he walked into his room, Richard was pleased to see the wash basin. It wasn't a bath, but at least he would be able to clean up before bed. He threw close the bolt on the door, locking himself in, even though he felt perfectly safe in the small inn. Kara was in the room beside his. Nikki was in a room downstairs on the first floor, close to the entrance and right beside the only stairs up to the second floor.
Men stood guard both inside and outside the inn, while yet more men patrolled the streets in the area around the building. Richard hadn't thought so many men were necessary, but Victor and the men were insistent about providing the protection, since enemy troops were in the area. In the end, appreciating the opportunity for a safe and peaceful night's sleep, Richard hadn't objected. He was so weary that he could hardly stand any longer. His hip sockets ached from the long day of walking over rough terrain. On top of the journey, the emotional talk with the people at Liberty Square had taken what energy he had left. Richard sloughed off his pack, letting it clunk down on the floor at the foot of the small bed before stepping to the washstand and splashing water on his face. He didn't know that water could feel so good. Nikki, Kara, and Richard had had a quick meal of lamb stew down in the small dining room. Jamila, the woman who ran the place for Ishaq, another partner, had been instructed by Ishaq to treat them as royalty. The round-faced woman had offered to cook them anything they desired. Richard hadn't wanted to make a fuss, and besides, the leftover lamb stew had meant there would be no waiting, and they could get to sleep all that much sooner. Jamila had seemed a little disappointed not to have the chance to cook them up something special. With the kind of meals they'd had over recent days, though, the bowl of lamb stew and fresh crusty bread with loads of butter had been about the best food Richard could recall having. Had it not been for so many troubling things on his mind, he would have savored it more. He knew that Kara and Nikki needed the rest as much as he did, so he insisted that each take a room of their own. Both women had wanted to stay in the same room as Richard, so that they could be close at hand and watch over him. He'd had visions of them both standing with their arms folded at the foot of his bed as he slept. He'd maintained that nothing was going to get to him on the second floor, and besides, there were plenty of men to stand guard. They had relented, but reluctantly, and only after he reminded them that the two of them would be more help to him if they were well rested and alert. It was a luxury for all of them not to have to stand watch for once, and be able to get the rest they needed. Victor had promised to come see Richard and Kara off in the morning. Ishaq had promised to have the horses in the stable and waiting long before then. Both Victor and Ishaq were sorry that he was leaving, but they understood that he had his reasons. None of them had asked where he was going, probably because they felt ill at ease talking about the woman none of them believed existed. He had begun to sense the distance it created in people when he mentioned Kaylin. From the tall window in his top-floor room, Richard had a breathtaking view of Spirit, off across the grounds below the rise where the inn stood. With the wick on the lamp in his room turned down low, he had no trouble seeing the statue in white marble lit by a ring of torches in tall iron stanchions. He idly recalled the many times he had been up on this same hillside looking down at Emperor Jagang's palace under construction. It hardly seemed like the same world. He felt as if he'd been dropped into some other life he didn't know, and all the rules were different. Sometimes he wondered if he really was losing his mind. Nikki, in a room on the bottom floor, close to the front door, probably couldn't see the statue. But Kara had the room next to his, so she undoubtedly had the same view. He wondered if she was taking advantage of it, and if she was, what she thought of the statue she saw. Richard couldn't imagine how she could not clearly remember everything it meant to him, to Kaylin. He wondered if she, too, felt as if she were living someone else's life, or if she thought he was losing his mind. Richard couldn't imagine what could possibly have happened to make everyone forget that Kaylin existed. He had held out some slim hope that the people in Altarang would remember her, that it had only been those immediately nearby when she had disappeared who were affected. That hope was now dashed. Whatever the cause, the problem was widespread. Richard leaned against the cabinet with the wash basin and tilted his head back as he closed his eyes for a moment. His neck and shoulders were sore from days of carrying his heavy pack as they trudged through dense and seemingly endless woods. Throughout the swift and difficult journey, even conversation had, for the most part, required too much effort. It felt good not to have to walk for a while, even if when he closed his eyes it seemed that all he could see was a parade of endless forests. With his eyes closed,
It felt as if his legs were still moving. Richard yawned as he lifted the baldric over his head and stood the Sword of Truth against a chair beside the washstand. He pulled off his shirt and tossed it on the bed. It occurred to him that this would be a good time to wash some of his clothes, but he was too worn out. He just wanted to clean up and then fall into bed and sleep. He stepped over to the window again as he went about washing with a soapy cloth. The night was dead quiet but for the ceaseless drone of the cicadas. He couldn't resist staring at the statue. There was so much of Kaelin in it that it made him heartsick. He had to force himself not to think about what horror she might be facing, what pain she might be enduring. Anxiety constricted his breathing. In an effort to set his worry aside for a while, he did his best to recall Kaelin's smile, her green eyes, her arms around him, the soft moans she sometimes made as she kissed him. He had to find her. He dipped the cloth in the water and wrung it out, watching dirty water run back into the basin, and saw that his hands were trembling. He had to find her. In another attempt to force his mind onto other things, he rested his gaze on the wash basin, deliberately taking in the vines painted all around the edge. The vines were blue, not green, probably so as to match the blue flowers stenciled on the walls and the blue flowers on the simple curtains and the decorative cover on the bed. Ishak had done an admirable job of building a warm and inviting inn. The water in the basin, still as a woodland pool, suddenly trembled for no apparent reason. Richard stood stock still, staring at it. The slack surface abruptly bunched into perfectly symmetrical harmonic waves, almost like the hair on a cat's back standing on end. And then, the whole building shuddered with a hard thump, as if struck by something huge. One of the panes of glass in the window cracked with a brittle pop. Almost instantly, from the far end of the building, came the muffled sound of splintering wood. Richard crouched, frozen, eyes wide, unable to tell what had caused the incomprehensible sound. His first thought was that a big tree had fallen on the place, but then he remembered that there were no large trees anywhere nearby. A heartbeat after the first jolt came a second thump. Louder this time. Closer. The building swayed under the crash of splintering wood. He glanced up, fearing that the ceiling might collapse. Half a heartbeat later came another thump that shook the building. Shattering, splintering wood let out a high-pitched screech, as if crying out in agony as it was being ripped apart. Thump. Crash. Louder. Closer. Richard touched the fingers of one hand to the floor to keep his balance as the building quaked under the jolt of the heavy impact. What had started at the far end of the building was rapidly coming closer. Thump, crash, closer still. Splintering shrieks howled through the night air as wood was rent violently apart. The building swayed, water sloshed in the basin, slopping over the rolled metal edge with the painted blue vines. The sounds of ripping walls and splintering boards melted together into one continuous roar. Suddenly, the wall to his left, the wall between his and Kara's room, exploded toward him. Clouds of dust billowed up. The noise was deafening. Something huge and black, nearly the size of the room itself, drove through the wall, splintering lath, sending plaster and debris showering through the air. The force of the concussion blew the door off its hinges and violently blasted the glass and the mullions out of the window. Long, ragged fragments of board spun through the room, one smashing the chair that held his sword, another piercing the far wall. His sword tumbled out of reach. One piece whacked Richard's leg hard enough to drop him to one knee. Animate darkness drove debris before it, sending everything flying, enveloping the light and plunging the flying wreckage into a surreal, swirling gloom. Icy fright shimmered through Richard's veins. He saw a cold cloud of his breath as he grunted with the effort of scrambling to his feet. Darkness, like death itself, plunged toward him. Richard gasped a breath. Frigid air stabbed like icy needles into his lungs. Shock at the pain of the cutting cold clenched his throat shut.
Richard knew that life and death balanced on a razor's edge, only an instant wide. With every ounce of his strength driving him, he dove through the window as if he were diving into a swimming hole. The side of his body brushed past the descending inky darkness. His flesh sizzled with a sharp sensation so cold that it burned. In midair, plummeting through the window out into the night, fearing the long drop, Richard snatched for the window's frame and only just managed to seize it with his left hand. He held on for dear life. His falling weight whipped him around so hard that his body slammed into the side of the building with enough force to knock the wind from him. He hung by his one hand, dazed by the wallop against the outside wall, trying to gasp in a breath. The humid night air on top of the blow against the wall, coming right after the frigid gasp in the room just before he jumped out the window, seemed to conspire to do its best to suffocate him. From the corner of his eye, he saw the statue in the fluttering torchlight. With her head thrown back, fists at her sides, and her back arched, the figure stood proud against the invisible power trying to subdue her. The sight of it, the strength of it, made Richard at last draw an urgent breath. He coughed and drew another, gasping for air as his feet searched for any purchase. They found none. He glanced down and saw that the ground was awfully far below him. It felt as if he might have ripped his shoulder from its socket. Hanging by one hand, he dared not let go. He feared that such a fall would at the least break his legs. Above, from the window, came a wail so shrill that it made every hair on his body stand on end and every nerve scream in sharp pain. It was a sound so black, so poisonous, so horrific, that Richard thought that surely the veil to the underworld had ripped apart, and the keeper of the dead had been loosed among the living. The savage wail in the room above him drew out into a twisting, seething shriek. It was a sound of pure hate brought to life. Richard glanced up and almost let go. The fall, he thought, might be preferable to the thing in the room now suddenly streaming out through the window. A dark, incorporeal stain poured out of the shattered window like the exhalation of utter evil. Although it had no shape, no form, it was somehow crystal clear to Richard that this was something beyond mere wickedness. This was a scourge like death itself on the hunt. As the inky shadow slipped through the window and out into the night, it suddenly began to disintegrate into a thousand fluttering shapes that darted off in every direction, the cold darkness decomposing, melting into the night, dissolving into the heart of the blackest shadows. Richard hung by one arm, panting, unable to move, watching, waiting for the thing to coalesce suddenly before his face and rip him apart. The hillside fell under the spell of a still hush. Death's shadow had seemingly become part of the night. The cicadas, until then silent, started in again. As they began their shrill songs, the rising sound moved in a wave across the vast expanse of grounds off toward the distant statue.
"Lord Rawl!"
a man below shouted.
"Hold on!"
The man, wearing a small brimmed hat similar to Ishak's, scrambled around the building, heading for the door. Richard didn't think that he could hang on by his one arm until someone came to help him. He groaned in pain, but managed to twist himself around enough to lunge, and with his other hand grasp the windowsill, his legs swinging to and fro over a frightening drop. He was relieved to find that just taking some of the weight off his one arm helped ease the pain. He had just pulled his upper body in through the shattered window when he heard people spilling into his room. The lantern was gone, probably buried, so it was hard to see. Men scrambled over the rubble littering the floor, their boots crunching shattered bits of the wall, snapping fragments of broken wooden furniture. Powerful hands seized him under his arms, while others grabbed his belt to help lift him back inside. In the nearly pitch-black room, it was difficult to get his bearings.
"Did you see it?"
Richard asked the man, as he still struggled to get his breath.
"Did you see the thing that came out of the window?"
Some of the men coughed on the dust while others spoke up that they hadn't seen anything.
"We heard the noise, the crashing, and the window breaking,"
one of them said. I thought the whole building was coming down.
Someone appeared with a candle and lit a lantern. The orange glow illuminated a startling sight. A second man, and then a third, held a lantern out to be set alight. Amid the swirling dust, the room was a confusing jumble, what with the bed overturned, the washstand embedded halfway through the far wall, and a hill of rubble across the floor. In the flickering light, Richard was able to better see the roughly round hole that had been blown through the wall. Broken lumber around the edges all jutted into his room, indicating the direction of intrusion. That was hardly a surprise. The size of the hole, though, was surprising. It spanned nearly the entire distance from floor to ceiling. Most of what had once been the wall now lay shattered all over the floor. Long, splintered boards knitted together sections of lath and chunks of plaster. He couldn't imagine how something that had made such a large rupture could have then made it out a window. Richard spotted his sword and worked it out from under broken boards. He propped it up against the windowsill, where it would be handy if he needed it, although he wasn't sure what his sword could have done against whatever it was that had come through the wall only to dissolve into the night. Men coughed from the thick dust still swirling through the air. Richard saw in the lantern light that they were all covered with the white dust, making them look like a gathering of ghosts. He saw that he, too, was covered in the white plaster. The only difference was that he was also bleeding from dozens of small cuts. The blood looked all the more stark against the white powder. He briefly brushed some of the plaster dust from his hair, face, and arms. Worried about others who might have been buried or hurt, Richard took one of the lanterns from a man standing nearby and then scrambled to the top of the rubble. He held up the light, peering into the darkness beyond the hole. The sight was astounding, although not unexpected, because he had heard and felt each one of those walls being violently breached. Each wall, in a straight line all the way back through the building, had a hole smashed through it. All the holes were similar to the one in the wall to his room. At the end, Richard could see stars through the round opening in the far outside wall. He stepped carefully over long, jagged fragments of wood. Some of the pile caved in under his weight, and it was a struggle to get his foot back out. Other than sporadic coughing, the men were mostly silent as they looked around in awe at the damage wrought by something unknown, something powerful that had vanished into the night. Through the swirling dust, Richard saw then Kara, standing in the middle of her room, looking off in the same direction as he, off toward the hole to the outside. Her back was to him, her feet spread in a defensive stance. Her aegil was gripped tightly in her right fist. Nikki, a flame dancing above her upturned palm, rushed into Richard's room through the broken doorway.
Richard, are you all right?
From atop the wreckage, Richard rubbed his left shoulder as he moved the arm.
I guess so.
Nikki murmured angrily under her breath as she stepped carefully over debris.
Any idea what's going on?
One of the men asked.
I'm not sure, Richard said.
Was anyone hurt? The men all peered around at each other. A few offered that they didn't think so, that everyone they knew was accounted for and safe. Another man said that the other rooms on the top floor had been unoccupied.
Kara, Richard called as he leaned into the dark hole. Kara, are you all right?
Kara didn't answer, nor did she move. She stood fixed in the same stance. His anxiety growing, Richard scrambled the rest of the way over the tangled boards and crumbled plaster. Using one hand against the ceiling to help him balance atop the unstable debris, he stepped through the hole into Kara's room. The destruction was much the same as it had been in his room. Two walls, rather than just one, were holed. But the impact had thrown the material from the second wall into Richard's room. The glass in her window, too, was blown out, but the door still hung, if crookedly, in place. Kara stood directly in the center line between the two holes, but she was backed closer to the void in the wall into Richard's room. Wreckage lay all around her. Her leather outfit appeared to have kept her from being shredded by the flying debris.
Kara? Richard called out again as he made his way down the shifting pile of rubble.
Kara stood unmoving in the dark room, still staring off into the distance. Nikki scrambled over the broken boards and plaster and through the hole in the wall. She seized Richard's arm briefly for support as she caught up with him.
Kara?
Nikki said as she brought her hand holding the flame around in front of Kara's face. Richard held up the lantern. Kara's eyes were opened wide, staring, yet unseeing. Tears had left damp trails through the dust on her face. She still hadn't moved from her defensive stance, but now that he was close, Richard could see that her entire body trembled. He gripped her arm, but startled, drew back. She was as cold as ice.
Kara! Can you hear us?
Nikki touched Kara's shoulder, and with the same surprise as Richard, drew back. Kara didn't react. It was as if she really were frozen in place. Nikki held the flame up close to the Mord Sith's face. Her skin looked almost pale blue. But with the way she was covered in a layer of white dust, he wasn't sure if it was really true or not. Richard slipped an arm around Kara's waist. It was like putting his arm around a block of ice. His instinct was to draw back, but he refused to allow himself to do so. He realized by how his shoulder hurt that he wasn't going to easily be able to lift her by himself. He looked back at the faces framed in the ragged round hole in the wall.
Could some of you help me with her?
Men scrambled over the wreckage, spilling into Kara's room, causing yet more dust to billow up. With others bringing light close, Nikki let the small flame extinguish as she stepped close to the Mord Sith. The men gathered into a knot as they silently watched the sorceress. Frowning in concentration, she pressed the flats of her hands to Kara's temples. With a cry, Nikki staggered back. Richard reached out with his free hand and caught her elbow to prevent her from tumbling backwards over the tangled rubble.
"Dear spirits,"
Nikki whispered, panting to catch her breath, as if from unexpected pain.
What?
Richard asked.
What is it?
The sorceress placed her hands over her heart, still gulping air as she recovered from the unexpected.
She's barely alive.
With his chin, Richard pointed to the door.
Let's get her out of here.
Nikki nodded.
Downstairs, my room.
Richard, without thinking, swept Kara up in his arms. Fortunately, the men were right there to help when they saw him wince in pain.
Dear Creator,
one of the men exclaimed as he lifted her leg.
She's as cold as the Keeper's heart.
Come on, Richard said. Help me get her downstairs. Once they lifted her, Kara's limbs were easily moved, although they wouldn't go limp. The men helping Richard carry Kara shuffled through the rubble. One of the men kicked the broken door out of the way. They carried her down the narrow stairs, feet first. Richard held her shoulders. At the bottom of the stairs, Nikki directed them into her room and to the bed. They gently laid Kara down as Nikki first yanked the covers out from under the stricken woman. Once Kara was settled into the bed, Nikki immediately covered her with the blankets. Kara's blue eyes were still opened wide, staring, it seemed, into some distant nothingness. Occasionally a tear set out from the corner of her eye on a slow journey across her cheek. Her chin, her shoulders, her arms trembled. Richard pried Kara's fingers open, making her release the Ajeel she still had in a death grip. Her eyes showed no reaction. He endured the excruciating pain of touching her Ajeel until he got it out of her grip and was able to release it to hang by the chain around her wrist.
Why don't you all wait outside? Nikki said in a quiet voice. Give me some time to see what I can do.
The men made their way out, saying that they were going back on patrol or to stand guard in case they were needed.
If that thing comes back, Richard told them, don't try to stop it. Come get me.
One of the men cocked his head in puzzlement.
What thing, Lord Rawl? What is it we're supposed to be looking for?
I'm not sure. All I was able to see was a huge shadow as it came through the wall and then went out the window. The man looked upward.
If it broke that hole through the wall to get through, then how did it get out a small window?
I don't know, Richard admitted. I guess I didn't really get a good look at it. The man glanced up again, as if he could see the wreckage above.
We'll keep our eyes wide open. You can be sure of that.
It was then that Richard remembered that he'd left his sword up in his room. It made him uneasy to be without it. He wanted to go get it, but he didn't want to leave Kara's side. After the last man had left, Nikki sat on the side of the bed as she held a hand over Kara's forehead. Richard knelt close.
What do you think is wrong? He asked.
Nikki let the hand settle on Kara's forehead.
I have no idea.
But you can do something to make her better?
Nikki's answer was a long moment in coming.
I'm not sure. Whatever I can do, though, I will.
Richard took hold of Kara's still trembling, frigid hand.
Do you think we should shut her eyes? She hasn't even blinked.
Nikki nodded.
Probably not a bad idea. I think it's the dust making her tears run.
One at a time, Nikki carefully shut Kara's eyes. It somehow made Richard feel better that Kara wasn't staring at nothing. Nikki returned her hand to Kara's forehead as she placed her other hand high on her chest. While Nikki held a wrist, an ankle, and slipped a hand under the back of Kara's neck, Richard went to the wash basin and returned with a wet cloth. He carefully washed Kara's face and brushed some of the dust and bits of plaster out of her hair. Through the wet cloth, he could feel the icy cold of her flesh. With as warm and humid as it was, Richard couldn't understand how she could be this cold. He remembered then how when the black thing had come crashing into his room, the air had suddenly gone icy cold. He remembered the painfully cold touch as he brushed past it as he leaped out the window.
Don't you have any idea what's wrong with her? Richard asked.
Nikki absently shook her head as she concentrated on pressing the palms of both hands against Kara's temples.
Any idea what that thing was that came through the walls?
Nikki turned to look up at him.
What?
I asked if you had any idea what could have done this, what crashed through the walls.
Nikki looked exasperated by the question. Richard, go wait outside, please, but I want to be in here with her.
Nikki gently took his wrist and lifted his hand off of Kara's.
You are interfering. Please, Richard, let me do this alone. It's easier without you watching over my shoulder.
Richard felt awkward being in the way.
If it will help Kara.
It will,
she said as she turned back to the woman in her bed. He stood and watched briefly. Nikki was already absorbed in slipping a hand under Kara's back.
Go,
the sorceress murmured. The thing that came through our rooms was cold. Nikki looked back over her shoulder.
Cold?
Richard nodded. It was so cold that I could see my breath. It felt painfully cold to be near it. Nikki considered his words briefly before turning back to Kara.
Thank you for the information. When I can, I will come out and let you know how she is doing. I promise.
Richard felt helpless. He stood in the doorway for a moment, watching the almost imperceptible movement of Kara's shallow breathing. The lamplight lit Nikki's fall of blonde hair as she leaned over the moored Sith, working to find out what was wrong. Richard had the awful feeling that he knew what was wrong with Kara. He feared that she had been touched by death itself. Chapter 17. After pulling his pack from the rubble, Richard briefly cleaned himself up and put on a shirt. He also put on his sword. He didn't know what had crashed into the building, but it seemed pretty likely that it had been coming for him. He had no idea if his sword would help him fight such a thing, but it did make him feel a little better having it at hand. Outside, the night air was still and warm. One of the men saw him emerge from the door and stepped closer.
How is Mistress Kara?
We don't know yet. She's alive. That's encouraging, at least. The man nodded. Richard recognized the man's hat. You were the one who saw me hanging from the window.
That's right.
Did you get a look at the thing that attacked us?
I'm afraid not. I heard all the commotion, looked up, and there you were hanging by one arm. I thought you might fall. That's all I saw.
No dark thing coming out of the window? The man clasped his hands behind his back as he thought about it a moment.
No, except maybe I might have just caught the shadow of something. At the most, that's all I might have seen, a glimpse of a shadow. I was more concerned with getting up there before you fell.
After thanking the man, Richard walked for a time without really thinking about where he was going. He felt as if he were in a daze, his thoughts as heavy and dark as the muggy night. Everything he knew and cared about seemed to be disintegrating. He felt helpless. The murky humidity obscured the stars, and the moon hadn't come up yet, but the lights burning in the city all around reflecting off the haze provided enough light for him to make his way to the edge of the hill. He felt useless, not being able to help Kara. She had so many times been there to help him. This time she had faced something that was more than she could handle. At the brink of the drop, Richard stood for a time gazing off at the statue of Spirit in the distance. Victor had made the ring of iron stanchions that held the torches. Kalin, fascinated by the process, had stood for most of a day in the blacksmith's sweltering shop, watching him shape the white-hot iron. Victor had not frowned once that day, but had smiled at her genuine interest as he showed her how he worked the metal to achieve what he wanted. Richard also remembered Kalin's awe at seeing that carving of her as being reproduced in towering white marble. He remembered when that small statue in buttery, smooth, rich, aromatic walnut was finally returned to her, and she had clutched it to her breast. He had watched the way her fingers had glided lovingly over the flowing robes. Richard remembered, too, the way her green eyes had then looked up into his eyes. Having no one believe him about Kalin made him feel completely alone and isolated. He'd never been in a situation like this before, where people who sincerely cared about him, thought that he was only imagining the things he told them. It was a frightening, helpless feeling to have people think he was out of touch with reality. But even that was not nearly as frightening as his worry about what might have become of Kalin. He didn't know what to do to find her. All he knew for sure was that he had to get help.
This is the end of disc number 6. Please insert disc number 7.